to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
And short stories.
And short stories! And writing, really.
Yeah. Mostly short stories because you can read them quickly.
Yay. Yes. I can read a 6,000-word short story in, what, like 10 minutes?
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, so I would like to apologize for being late this week and not having the book done. I work at a law firm, and we're going to trial in a week or so, and I've been working a ton of overtime and hating everything about life. In addition to having 3 ACT students for the ACT this Saturday, so I pretty much have no free time, and when I do, I spend it weeping softly. Much of the chagrin of my boyfriend. So that's why I picked our short story for this week, because I figured I under-empathized with the mood in it quite well.
Going slowly mad.
we read The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman. And for anyone who has been an English major or ever taken a introduction to fiction class where you had to read short stories, you were, I'd say, likely introduced to this story. It's pretty popular. Stands out for the fact that it was written by a woman over 100 years ago, and you can bring up some good feminist and women's issues while talking about it.
Yeah, I was actually startled to see that the date on it was 1899, even before I read it, because I'd heard about it, and then I read it, and I was not as surprised, honestly, because it fit the era pretty well, as far as writing style goes, but the ideas in it do feel like, they do feel a little more advanced to me.
Uh-huh. I think she actually is putting some of what we would consider feminist dialogue into the story.
I think so, and even if somehow she wasn't, which, again, I think she was, but even if she didn't intend to, I think it's really hard to read it without inserting some of your own.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be talking about several different ways and aspects to read this story. And like with Hills Like White Elephants, we would recommend going out and reading this story. It'll take you longer than Hills Like White Elephants because it's more than 2 pages long.
Yeah, it is a solid 6,000 words, according to the author, I think.
But
it won't take you very long, and if you're about to listen to this episode, just hit pause right now. It's online for free. Just Google The Yellow Wallpaper. And it'll be right there, and it'll almost certainly be the same edition we read, because it's like the second or third return.
Yep.
Or you can use Bing, but if you have to Bing something, please use Google.
Yes. Please use Bing to search Google. We're looking at you, Devin. So just a little bit of background for anyone who's not aware. The historical moment in which this story was written, you might have heard of Victorian women having fainting fits and being hysterical. And that was actually a thing in the late 1800s. Victorian, and I say Victorian just applying to the time period, not necessarily women who live in England. So women at the time, were getting diagnosed with hysteria, and men were trying to come up with all these ways to cure their hysteria. And a lot of times, hysteria was depression, whether just clinical or postpartum. The fact that a woman's place, if you were in high-class society, was to sit at home all day with no stimulation. It's probably not a huge wonder that they started.
I have a couple thoughts on this. One, I think it shows the ignorance of medicine, particularly psychological medicine, the understanding of mental health. I think it shows a blatant historical sexism in that you never hear about hysterical men. You hear about madmen, mm-hmm. which is kind of interesting because I read lots of references to hysterical women and lots of references to madmen. I can't think of a reference to very many references to mad women. and zero references to hysterical men. And then as far as the fainting fits go, I have no basis for this, but I blame it on the corset myself.
Yeah.
Hard to breathe in those damn things, I would imagine.
Yeah, try to get some physical activity in.
I mean, I've never tried one on, but...
None of it. Supposedly, if you wear a corset correctly, it helps your shape a little bit, but doesn't choke you. But, of course, trying to attain the perfect figure, many women are wearing them much, much too tightly.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you always think of the image, I mean, from movies and TV, who knows how accurate it is, but I think I've read references to it too, though, of the servant, like, just pulling on those damn laces as hard as they can.
Sucking in.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Her, like, the servant planting her foot on the woman's
back
and just,
that's
like,
exactly what I'm picturing.
Pulling on those ribbons and strings. And for anyone who's interested in takes on this type of thing, I strongly suggest you go read or see the vibrator play. It is also based on hysterical ladies, and the fact that doctors, one of the ways they used to try to treat it was by applying a vibrator to the woman, often in her vaginal region, and basically doctors are just getting you off. Seriously, the modern day sexual plaything vibrator started as a medical tool to cure hysteria.
Huh.
It's an awesome play.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it.
I can imagine some circumstances where you might not mind having that prescribed.
There's a great scene in the play. The doctor is this nurse's aide who's helping him, and he's cranking up the electricity on the vibrator, and the fuse blows or whatever the heck happens in the 1890s, and it won't work. And he goes, okay. Well, nurse, I guess we'll have to apply the treatment manually. And the nurse rolls up her sleeves and sticks her hand. And the woman being treated does not really mind, so it's okay.
All right, fair enough.
Anyway, so the yellow wallpaper is not really a comedy, I guess.
If you read it as a comedy, then I have concerns for your own mental state. Let's put it that way.
Charlotte Perkins Gilman herself was actually treated for nervous hysteria, the way the woman in this story is treated for nervous hysteria, and several months into the treatment decided, this is going to make me go crazy, even though she's already viewed as crazy.
Right.
And so she said, screw you guys and do what I want to do.
And then got much better.
Got much better, and then decided, let's take my experience to the full conclusion of someone who's not able to escape the treatment.
Right. And I mean, and again, the demonstration of, like, knowledge of mental illness, the idea of taking someone suffering from some form of depression and sticking them in isolation from everyone and everything with no stimulation whatsoever.
That sounds like hell.
That would make me depressed.
Yeah.
And just, like, wouldn't, like, meeting with some friends or having something to occupy yourself? It seems like the opposite of that would be the more effective
cure. Go out, have goals, achieve them.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what, and I'm obviously not an expert, but I'm pretty sure that's what depression patients are more likely to do today.
Yeah.
To set small goals, to find something to achieve so they feel like they're accomplishing something and not overwhelmed by stuff. And I mean, makes sense to me. Maybe it's just because the way we treat it now, but
right.
Yeah, so the main character of the story is being treated for hysteria. Her husband is a doctor, and he decides that the cure is to go rent this manor house in the country for 3 months and basically just shut her up in the house and she'll get better. She's not allowed to read or write, because it'll make her too tired. She's not allowed to see any friends. Yeah. She understandably doesn't like that very much.
Yeah, despite the fact it's totally working.
According to him.
Yeah.
And the room that she's staying in has yellow wallpaper in it, hence the title of the story. And because she has nothing else to do, she becomes absolutely obsessively fixated on the wallpaper in the room until it's the only thing that she can
It's, yeah, until it's the only thing she can think about. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is a fairly dreary room to begin with.
It sounds awful. Yeah.
Like, the bed is bolted to the floor, the windows are barred.
The windows are barred, there are rings and things on the wall. It sounds almost like a torture chamber.
Yeah.
The paper isn't even uniformly put up around the room. Parts of it are stripped off in great patches all around the head of the bed, and around the room in general. The floor is scratched and gouged and splintered. The plaster is dug out. Yeah, the bed is nailed down. And I think there's one point... Oh, she says that the bedpost has been gnawed on.
Yeah.
Which sounds creepy. So, yeah. Room doesn't sound too pleasant. It kind of sounds like a torture horror chamber. It
definitely sounds like a cell.
She thinks it used to be a nursery. I think because of those descriptions and the fact that she thinks she sees a woman hiding in the wallpaper who's, you know, shaking the bars of the wallpaper to get out, that the room was probably more used for previous mental patients.
Yeah, maybe that's what this manor is for. That's what they advertise.
I actually had the thought that Mr. Rochester's wife could have stayed in this room type of thing, you know? Because she paced around and tore at things.
Right.
I mean, she was... I thought that was interesting. That was something I wanted to mention, is that Mrs. Rochester in Jane Eyre is kind of treated the same way. I mean, I don't think she has hysteria, but something like it. And she's basically just locked away in a room with one person as a companion.
Right.
But it's viewed as this, well, he's trying to do the best that he can taking care of her. And in this story, the man doing the best he can to take care of her is basically to do the same thing, except that you see how horrible that is and how it leads to
her. Right, when you actually isolate exactly what's happening as opposed to just making some references to it. Though this depressed woman seems to be less sick than Rochester's wife, but who knows? She actually sounded like she might have been like a paranoid schizophrenic or something mm-hmm. like that. Not to take the tangent too far, but...
I just thought it was interesting that they're kind of the same situation from two different points of view.
Right, and both 19th century, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I guess just a couple of things to talk about concerning how to view the story. There are definitely gothic elements to the story. First of all, the fact that the room is really kind of a scary cell-like place. Right. As she mentions that the house is separated from everyone, surrounded by hedges, and that she never sees anyone, and the house feels queer to her.
Yeah.
Which her husband just goes, oh, you silly woman. And the fact that toward the end of the story, she starts seeing this woman in the wallpaper creeping around the grounds of the house, I think it's pretty safe to say that's not actually happening. But if you wanted to read this story as a straight gothic supernatural tale, it could be happening.
Yeah, maybe that's adding to the madness.
Yeah, the ghost of the past woman who was locked in the room, or however you want to see it.
I think if you were making this into a movie, you would have to show images of that.
Yeah.
Though I'd leave it up for grabs as to whether they were real, if it was me.
Well, you definitely have to have a heavy voiceover for a movie version, otherwise you would lose...
A movie version would add so much stuff to make it filmable that it would probably destroy the story. Yeah.
I was kind of thinking that
while it wouldn't even be about the woman anymore by the time Hollywood is done with it.
About the husband, noble husband. Yeah, that's what Hollywood does. And how he escapes this horrible wife.
I'm like, oh, damn it.
Hollywood, look what you've done.
You're so terrible that we're mad at you for a movie you haven't even made.
We should do a special episode of Novel Ideas that just talks about women in movies, since we talk about women in books.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually not a bad idea.
Let's Bechdel test this shit.
That's right. Make the movie about the house. The queer house.
For LGBT.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no. Okay, so we have that aspect of the gothic aspect. And the other one is the idea of men suppressing women's voices and ideas. So here's this male doctor. He knows exactly what's going on, and he's setting this. This is what you have to do. And she mentions at several points throughout the story, I feel like if I was allowed to write, I would feel better. Or if I was allowed to exercise, I would feel better. But I guess he knows best.
Or if I could see my friends, I would feel better.
Uh-huh. And when she's either afraid to bring it up to him, she writes secretly in her journal and doesn't let anyone see, or when she is brave enough to bring it up to him, he just laughs it off.
Right.
He calls her silly goose and yes. little girl.
Oh, my dear goose.
Yeah. You will be as sick as you choose, I think is something he says. And I was like, you turd.
That sounds like pseudo-scientific psychology to me.
Though. Yeah. And the other thing is that he is not concerned with her psyche because as she's getting physically healthier, she's mentally deteriorating pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just so pleased with her progress because she looks so much healthier. She's eating more, she's rosier in the cheeks, more robust. And he thinks that means she's fine. But
it's working!
Yeah. And one of the conversations, I actually led a discussion on this short story for a class I took over the summer. And one of the things we talked about is John, the husband, is he a bad guy or not?
Yeah, because the story, I mean, this is another example of if you put it in full context, you can wonder if it's just an effect of the era, because he talks to her like lots of men talk to women in 19th century stories, which by 2013 point of view is pretty much sexist douchebag behavior. And I mean, I even would say I just mentioned this to as a part of the spin on how maybe you want to interpret it, because I'm not sure I fully excuse it just because that was the era, because a woman is still a person.
Mm-hmm. And there were men of that era who respected women and talked to them.
It sure seems like it would be impossible for every single man to be like, oh, you goose. And also the medical ignorance, again, especially about mental illness,
mm-hmm.
Because you could read this and go, man, this guy is a total dick. Or you could read it and go, well, he honestly thinks that he's helping. He's just so clueless, he has no idea how much harm he's actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
Though I feel like if he was actually paying more attention to his wife than just looking at her rosy cheeks, he could probably figure it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, if your wife's telling you, I feel horrible, I hate this room, you'd think you'd say, okay, let's put one you like.
Right?
Like, if you respect her feelings. It was actually pretty interesting, too. In a poll of the class, most of the guys tended to go, well, he's doing the best he can, and his wife's going crazy.
Hmm.
And the women tended to say, he needs to listen to what she has to say, and he's a jerk. And I really liked the fact that it divided right on the gender lines, too.
That is interesting to me as well, because I definitely think that he did a very poor job of listening to what she had to say.
Yeah. One of the things that one of the ways to read it, I guess, is she's sinking into this insanity from pure boredom, I can assume. But one of the arguments is maybe through going crazy, she's growing more sane. Because at the beginning, she's talking about all these ways her husband's condescending to her, not treating her well. The line that jumped out at me is at the beginning, she brings up a concern to him, and she says, John laughs at me, of course, but one expects that in a marriage. And I just wrote, no.
No, in capital letters.
That is not okay. And then she keeps forgiving him, you know, one expects that in a marriage, or he said I not to do this, but he knows best. And then at one point in the story, she starts resenting him. When he talks, she's insulting him, and at one point she says she's afraid of him, and there's an interpretation of maybe through sinking into this insanity. She's actually becoming more sane and clear on the way the world works, and that her husband is not this perfect angel of comfort.
Right.
And that he's not doing things right, and she should be afraid of him because he's making her go crazy.
Right, yeah.
So maybe by going crazy, she's actually seeing things more clearly.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah, I think so.
I think, I don't know if I would put it in quite as broad of strokes as that myself. I kind of like that idea. To me, it's more of her just self-awareness grows while she's shut up having nothing else to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe she's not seeing the world better. In fact, I think she is less sane as far as the world goes, but maybe getting slightly more sane as far as herself and her relationship goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because once she stops forgiving him, and myself as a modern woman, I'm going, yeah!
Right, like, come on, even if you are trying your best, like, you're the doctor, couldn't you go interact with her for a couple hours a day at least, because then you can at least monitor whether she's getting too excited. Like, you can find a medical rationale to take her feelings into consideration.
He's not really very attentive.
The more we talk about him, the more I'm leaning towards the John's a dick theory.
Yeah. He's away all day, mm-hmm. and even some nights when his cases are serious. I'm glad my case is not serious.
Yeah, snark.
Yeah.
Did you convince any of the guys in the class that he was a dick after you talked about it?
I think we convinced a couple, because we talked a lot about her going insane, not as just a result of her being a crazy woman.
Right.
Which is what a lot of 20-year-old guys in Kansas think. And toward the end of the class, a lot of the guys started going, I can see it that way, that she's not just a crazy person.
Well, I mean, clearly the isolation is doing terrible things to her.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see any interpretation where you can read it and go, well, she's just a crazy woman. Yeah.
There was one girl in the class who was really passionate and on my side and was just, like, yelling at one of the guys in the class.
And he was like, oh, my.
You are so wrong! Stop reading the story like a douche! It was awesome. And, I mean, again, if you want to read into the gender interplay in that classroom dynamic, it's the men in the class not taking the women in the class's opinions seriously about what's going on with this woman in a story written by a woman.
Right. That is really interesting. I see, like, a PhD research topic in there for somebody.
Just go to various college classes, teach the yellow wallpaper, and then write about the interplay of people's...
Or a documentary, even. That could be totally... That could be totally fascinating.
Fun. I will talk to Dr. Anthony Funari.
Yeah, man. We don't have any filmmaker fans out there?
One other thing I did want to mention is that sometimes when people read the story, they want to diagnose her.
Mm.
And one of the clues people point to the most often is she mentions the fact that she has a baby who's staying at the house that she never really pays attention to because it makes her too nervous.
Right.
And her husband's sister takes care of it instead. And a lot of people think maybe she's suffering from postpartum depression from, depending on how old the baby is. I guess you can have that for a long time, though.
I've read that it can last for years, even, sometimes. I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, there's probably not enough information in the story to come up with a good diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
but I would imagine that, I mean, knowing that postpartum depression is a real phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
that it's probably a lot more common than people realize,
mm-hmm.
That had to be a big percentage of cases of, oh, hysterical woman, let's put her on rest and no stimulation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she had a baby and now she's hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and if you, we might have talked about this in an earlier episode, but hysteria comes from hystera, which is the Greek word for womb.
Right.
And how they thought when a woman was going hysterical, it meant her womb was, like, wandering to different places in her body.
Huh.
And that...
Well, that really would make you hysterical.
So, there were doctors who would do things like light sage by a woman's, like, vaginal opening to try and draw the womb back down to where it was supposed to be and stuff.
Hmm.
Which is why I think you only hear about hysterical women.
Yeah.
Because the word itself is tied to the female anatomy.
Feminine word, yeah. Girl, why are you so crazy?
Your womb be in your armpit, girl.
My womb is creeping about my body.
Creepy. That's what I'm going to say the next time I feel awful. I'm going to be like, my womb is, like, in my chest, and it's fucking me up.
My womb is everywhere. It is utter chaos inside of me.
But because Ben mentioned the womb creeping around...
I had no choice.
Maybe we could talk about the word creep. The fact that the more obsessed with this woman in the wallpaper the narrator gets, the more she talks about creeping.
Yes, creeping about. This woman always creeping about the grounds. And
yeah, first she's creeping around the wallpaper, mm-hmm. then she's creeping about the grounds. And maybe not even one woman. I think at one point she says... Yes,
there are multiple at one point.
Yeah. Sometimes I think there are a great many women behind, and sometimes only one. So, you know, take that as you will.
Mm-hmm.
Either she's nuts, or, like we said, maybe this house is just used to hold hysterical women, and these are all kind of phantom women who
yeah.
are under this...
So, metaphorically, perhaps the women who've been trapped in that room being trapped in the wallpaper, or
uh-huh.
perhaps gothically, actually, spirits of women from
uh-huh.
that room trapped in the wallpaper.
And then, of course, you know, the narrator being trapped in the room, seeing women trapped and creeping around. And toward the end of the story, she even starts mentioning that she is creeping.
Yes.
this is actually one of my favorite parts of this couple lines, when she... sees the woman creeping along. I don't blame her a bit. It must be very humiliating to be caught creeping by daylight. I always lock the door when I creep by daylight. I was like, oh man, now we're getting real.
Yep. We are not feeling well at this point.
Yeah. And then in the last page or so, creep is appearing constantly. All of her moves are now creeping.
Uh-huh.
And she's doing all of the things that she's noticed about the room. So she saw that the bedpost was gnawed. She gnaws the bedpost so it hurts her teeth. And that there's a ring around the wallpaper where it looks like someone walked around the room and ran their hand along it so much they wore it all down.
Uh-huh.
And she starts doing that.
Yep.
And she even... mentions that at one point she becomes the woman in the wallpaper. She's creeping around the room, and then she mentions that she knows that there are a lot of other women outside of the windows creeping around, and then she says, I wonder if they all came out of the wallpaper as I did.
Yeah, that's probably the moment where her sanity has left her fully.
Yeah. I would say that's pretty safely a mental break. Again, if you wanted to interpret fully gothically, then maybe the spirit of a woman in the wallpaper possesses her or something, actually comes out of the wallpaper. I don't think that's what's happening.
I don't think so either. I think they are metaphorical, though. I think there is a chance she's actually seeing them, because, I mean, she's not exactly the most reliable narrator in the world at this point. Though I have to say, the more we talk about the story, the more I think about it. Like, when I read it, I had certain impressions, and I'm finding it more disturbing now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that it wasn't disturbing at all the first time, but I'm finding it more, like, supernaturally disturbing now. Just, like, this image in my head of these crazy women creeping about. Like looking over my shoulder.
And I love how she says... She doesn't turn fast enough, so she knows they're there, but she doesn't see them.
Oh,
they're always creeping just out of the corner of her vision. It's like any good horror movie where someone thinks they see a ghost out of the corner of their eye.
Because I actually read in the Wheel of Time series, the men who use magic are going mad from a taint that's on the magical source for men, and one of them totally, like, sees people in shadows, or I should say has the exact same thing, where he's always darting his eyes around the room and can never quite put eyes on them, but he knows they're there. Uh-huh. It's like, somebody should probably
help you.
Stop teaching him how to kill people with fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So, at the end, her husband, who has finally realized there's something wrong with her after her final mental break...
See, he's just doing the best he can.
No. I really dislike this guy. I think he's a jerk. Finally gets into the room, and she yells at him, and then she doesn't know why, but he faints and lies there on the ground, and she just keeps on creeping around the room, stepping over him because he's in her way, and that's how the story ends.
I know, that insensitive jerk won't get out of the doorway.
Some people haven't interpreted it not so much as he fainted, but as maybe she struck him with something heavy, and...
Hey, she's much healthier and more robust now.
Maybe he's dead or unconscious, and she's creeping over him.
I could definitely see, well, unconscious, obviously, but unconscious from violence, perhaps. I'm pretty sure, in my head, that if he was dead, it would have been made marginally more obvious, but at the same time, she's so busy creeping about the room that maybe she is crazy enough to brain him with something and then just keep crawling over his corpse.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like if he fainted, he would have not get up. Crawled over more than a couple of times at most.
Before he went, oh, shit. And either woke up and ran off or, like, tried to restrain her.
Yeah.
Probably restrain her because he's that type of dude.
Right.
But, you know, you can make the argument that if he had listened to her, she'd probably be healthier. Yeah. And when you don't listen to women and suppress them, it's actually... A lot of arguments feminists like to make is that sexism hurts men and women.
Right.
Because it puts women down and makes them, you know, forces them into these roles. But then it also forces men into roles.
That's true. On the surface, I agree with that. I can't say that that's a piece of feminist theory that I've put a lot of thought into or have been terribly familiar with, but that does seem to make sense to me.
The idea if a woman has to be emotional and sensitive, then a guy's not allowed to be. So, and society, I think, because people like to say, oh, women are just better expressing their feelings. I think society teaches women to be better at expressing their feelings. And a lot of the guys I know, my brothers and boyfriend included, you have to work harder to draw it out of them, and they have to work harder to express it. In the case of this story, it would be sexism hurting both men and women by her potentially murdering him.
Right.
And her going crazy, which is not quite the same thing.
Right.
But
I guess my question for that interpretation is it a stronger story if he's dead instead of just fainted away at the shock of what he's done to her?
Well, and I actually think that's interesting. Him fainting at the shock of what he's done to her, as opposed to him fainting because he's just like, this bitch be crazy!
Right.
And fainting.
So yeah, so I guess I'm putting a spin on that.
A positive spin, actually. He's fainting because he realized what he did to her, as opposed to...
So if it's self-awareness as opposed to just fainting through terror, as tends to happen in that era of storytelling, then... I think that is a really interesting idea to me. And if he's dead, that's also an interesting idea to me. Basically, both of those, I think, make it a stronger story for different reasons. Whereas if he's just fainting from the horror of it and she's just crawling over his passed out, dumb shit body.
I really like the idea of him feigning from self-awareness. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think I like that interpretation.
Yeah. Maybe he redeems himself a little bit at the end.
Yeah, maybe this is reading into my own psychology now. I'm like, maybe he's such an ass, and then he finally realizes that even though he thought he was trying to do the right thing, he actually could have helped her a lot more by actually paying attention to her and not just her physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And just in case anyone wants a little bit of unsolicited relationship advice, and this is relationships with everyone in general, not sure, just romantically. If a woman's complaining and you value her as a human being and listen to her like a real person, then that's way better than not. Yeah. Just in general.
Right.
There was this one commercial on TV where they had the five second Klondike challenge, and they started the timer, and the guy looked at his wife really seriously, and she started talking about some issue she was having with somebody at work.
Yeah.
And after 5 seconds, this timer goes off, confetti's flying around, and the beautiful women rush into the room with posters and flyers and Klondike bars, and he's, yeah, I did it, I listened to her feelings for 5 seconds.
Yeah, that was pretty appalling.
That always made me fly into a rage.
That, yeah.
Why would you marry someone if you don't give a shit about their feelings?
That was one of those commercials that I saw for the first time, and I went, this is so offensive. Are they going to have to take this off the air? And to be fair, that campaign didn't last a super long time, but it did last several weeks, so it's not like it aired once and went away.
Mm-hmm.
But at least we didn't see a whole, like, series of them over the course of 3 years.
Yes, thank God.
Also, what is Klondike doing? I would imagine women are a bigger demographic for them than men.
Because women like chocolate more?
Well, kind of.
According to advertising. I think women eat more chocolate because advertisers are like, hey, women, eat some fucking chocolate.
I do think dessert advertising does tend to be aimed more at women in general. That's why I'm kind of wondering. That's why I think it's interesting that
we all need
this
to
ad completely alienates women, basically.
Yeah, I just think the idea of deigning to listen to your girlfriend talk about her problems, that makes you the asshole husband in this story.
Right. And whatever happened to what would you do for a Klondike bar? That was cute.
Yeah.
I would listen to my wife for 5 seconds, and then like a wrecking ball swings into the frame and takes him out.
Yeah. Fail. And some hot guy walks in and he's like, I'll listen to you forever and feed you Klondike bar.
I'd listen to you for a Klondike bar.
Dear God.
Oh, my.
Anyway.
This is why we are not in marketing. We wouldn't actually advertise the product. We just set up, like, advertising tropes and then make bad things happen to the people who did it. Yeah, I'm going to a party for light beer! He, like, gets struck by lightning or something.
Or that Snickers. That was the Snickers commercial. Where they did the need a minute, and they had the person taking a bite of the Snickers while they thought. And there's one where a guy gets a text from a woman named Terry that says, where are you? And the wife or the girlfriend says, who's Terry? And it says, need a minute? And the guy takes a bite of the Snickers, and he goes, oh, she's my boss. And the woman, completely, you know, fine now, goes, oh, okay. And then he's sly little, like, I'm like, so we're supposed to admire this man lying to his girlfriend about cheating on her.
Right.
Yeah.
Would have been better if Terry was a guy in that scenario. It's one of those androgynous names.
Terry's just a bro. I don't believe you. And then Terry walks in.
And it's Terry Tate, office linebacker.
Yeah, so advertising sucks.
Yeah, in summary.
Snickers is particularly horrible, because they were also the ones who had the Super Bowl ad with the two guys eating on either side of the Snickers bar, like a Lady and the Tramp
thing,
until they met in a kiss, and then they're like, huh, now we have to be manly, and they both do a super manly thing, like hitting something with a hammer and something else. And then all the LGBT groups were like, really, guys? Like, two dudes kissing is so horrible and so unmanly. I just like the argument the gay guys make of, isn't kissing another dude, like, the manliest thing you
I was just
do?
About to say that. What's like, manlier than boning another dude? Yeah,
than two dudes with beards and huge muscles fucking each other. Like.
Yeah, you have to admit, that's fucking manly.
I think we've gone off a little bit of a tangent.
All right, well, let's reel it back in.
I'll go ahead and reel back in. That is one of the great things about this story, though, is that it doesn't just... It's not just, oh, here's this gothic tale of a woman being forced to go insane and this hysterical thing which only applies to the 1880s and 90s. It's obviously a theme and a plot that you can see played out even in the modern day.
Mm-hmm. It's still, like, some of the ways of thinking that lead to this story still exist.
Uh-huh.
For sure.
So, I definitely recommend it. I enjoy this story.
Yeah, and if you've gotten this far into the podcast without having clicked over to another window and read the story, dude, you could have finished the story in, like, a quarter of this time.
Read this. I sat down with a pen and took notes as I read it, and I think it took me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Granted, not everyone reads as quickly as us, but
sure.
It's not going to take more than an hour at the most.
Right.
So.
Let's see. Any lingering thoughts you still need to address?
I think I got everything out that I wanted to.
Cool.
I flipped through and made sure I addressed all my notes, so.
I like your notes. I don't really have anything to add other than what I already have.
Yeah, if anyone wants to contribute to our yellow wallpaper project fund, maybe we can start do a Kickstarter.
I actually do think that would be an interesting documentary.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, we'll think about that. If anyone out there wants to help.
Has any good ideas.
That's right.
Let us know.
And the ways you can let us know. You can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com, which our buddy Kevin sent us an excellent email, very long and had awesome points, which we will address more later.
Yes, in our next full-length episode, though this one's creeping up on that. You can tweet us at Novel Ideas Pod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
Yeah, where you can rate, review, comment, help people find the podcast.
Also, iTunes just informed us everyone has to have a banner picture now.
Oh.
I don't know if ours counts, it just says WordPress. But if someone can help us, for the love of God, find out how to make a picture for Novel Ideas, that would be awesome.
That's true. Someone, because, well, I mean, like, I can throw a crappy image together if I can figure out how to send that over to iTunes from WordPress, but there's a whole .com versus .org thing going on here, and basically the commercial version that is dumbed down to make it easy for people like me to use it doesn't let you go in and edit things like that. So, I guess we'll find out what happens. Can it just take our banner from our WordPress site? That seems like the easiest,
yeah. Next time, we will be doing The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin, which we are both reading. I just am not close to finishing yet. but I'm traveling this weekend, so I should have time. And hopefully we will get that out.
Early returns on it for me are interesting book. Pick it up. Check it out.
And it's not very long or difficult to read so far.
No, it's not. And I think it fits into the mold of science fiction stories that you don't have to be a science fiction person to appreciate.
I agree.
So.
She even has an introduction where she talks all about that.
Yeah, she does. Interesting woman. Also fits our feminist thing that we seem to have going on.
Yeah.
I guess that will do it.
Yeah.
See you next time.
Bye.